Chen v. Holder. Mr. Zhou.
Hi, good morning to this honorable court. My name is Gang Zhou. I'm attorney for the petitioner Liang Chen in Chen v. U.S. Attorney General. It has been 2 years since this case was last heard about the IJ in February 2007. And back then, of course, the legal framework was different. If the IJ had made a positive credibility finding, then petitioner would have been granted asylum. And looking back at it now, the IJ's denial is solely based on an adverse credibility finding.
But the BIA didn't. I mean, the first point the government makes is that the Board of Immigration Appeals wrote enough here that's really the decision we are reviewing, and paragraph 3 of their decision says, even assuming arguendo that the respondent testified credibly, he has still failed to sustain his burden of proof for asylum. So they've really taken credibility off the table. Assume every word that Mr. Chen testified to is true. This isn't enough because A, they've abandoned the per se rule for spouses, and B, there's nothing in the particular circumstances that I'm describing their decision. I'm not making any arguments, but I think that's the finding that you need to address yourself to.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, there is a marked difference between assuming someone is credible and reversing an adverse credibility finding, because an adverse credibility finding reversed would entitle the applicant's testimony and supporting document to full evidentiary weight. And
why does it matter, though? If you believe everything that Mr. Chen said, you have a situation of a person whose wife was subjected to a forced abortion, a person who lived in China for 4 years thereafter, a person who didn't, to any material I see in the record, stand out as a resister of this policy, which seems to have carried some weight with the BIA, and so on. I mean, I don't need to review all the facts of the case. But why would a reversing the credibility determination make any difference?
Your Honor, petitioner's claim is not just based on what happened to his wife. He also claims that while he was in China, he faced a punitive economic penalty with his wife's job taken away. He would not be able to support the whole family. And in addition, he also claims that he or his wife would face forced sterilization if the wife failed to submit to the mandatory examinations for 6 months in a row or twice in a row. So that's the other part of his claim. And even if petitioner's original claim based on the wife's abortion is taken away completely, then his well-founded fear of a claim still deserves adjudication. And that's where this case-by-case analysis comes into picture. Because based on the Attorney General's decision matter of JS, the Attorney General remanded that case for reconsideration of that applicant's separate claim of well-founded fear, because that applicant also claimed that he was threatened with being sterilized personally. And that's where the fact-finding has to be made, because apparently the Attorney General or the Board of Immigration Appeals is not a body to make a fact-finding in the first instance. That's why this case had to be remanded to the IG again for the consideration of whether petitioner's claim of punitive financial punishment would rise to persecution, because that is not within the purview of Section 601 parenthesis A.
Doesn't the record show that his wife in 2005 lost her job, unfortunately, anyway, from some government layoff? And that's my first question. My second question is, didn't he have the opportunity in the hearing to present concrete evidence of threats to himself of forced sterilization?
Your Honor, back then in February 2007, given the different legal framework, petitioner back then would be able to make his case in chief if he was found credible on the abortion issue. And also, when government questioned petitioner on whether the wife still had a job, he mentioned that it was lost due to overstaffing, then there was no follow-up questions. Because back then, it was not a crucial issue. Now it becomes a central issue.
Sure.
That's why further federal funding becomes important.
So your point is, if he'd been believed the first time around by the IJ, this was still during an era when forced abortion of your spouse was enough to show political opinion persecution, right?
Correct.
And there would have been a grant of asylum, and then we wouldn't be here at all.
Correct. Your Honor, therefore, I believe this case should be remanded for reconsideration of petitioner's well-founded fear claim under the separate category of whether punitive damage or punitive financial punishment arises to the level of persecution. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Zhou. Mr. Brinkman?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Drew Brinkman on behalf of the Attorney General. Just to address Mr. Chen's point, the IJ actually made a credibility finding and a burden of proof finding. There wasn't just the credibility finding. So if the IJ had found Mr. Chen credible, the IJ said, I still wouldn't grant this case. So that's kind of a misstatement of facts.
Well, this Fujian province, what is their policy?
Well, the best evidence would be in the State Department profile, which I would think Your Honors are aware of, but it's in the record. The profile states that the Chinese government prohibits forcible abortion or sterilization. Instances do occur in the Fujian province.
But Fujian province, their official statement, which we've had in other cases, suggests that they do they impose heavy fines. If you don't pay the fine, you may get sterilized. Where is all that? This case seems so isolated from all our other discussions of Fujian province.
Isolated just that they didn't discuss the Fujian
cases. We've had countless cases from Fujian province where apparently the governmental policy is enforced with particular rigor. Now, this fellow, if he's sent back, doesn't he face a significant risk of forcible sterilization if they have another child?
Well, I would say that's very speculative that would happen.
Why is that speculative?
First of all, he's not currently in violation of the Chinese family planning policy.
But that's the problem with that argument. Reminds me very much, say, in the religious context, if
right.
you were Jewish and in China, and the only way you could live a peaceful life would be either to hide when you were having your seders or in other ways, you know, not let anybody know, you could live peacefully for a long time by not practicing your religion. But the law is quite clear. That's not regarded as what you're supposed to be able to do. Now, if these people comply and she shows up for all her required gynecological examinations and she gets her IUD tested, et cetera, sure, you know, they haven't been in trouble. But that can't be the standard.
Well, I know there's case law that says where Chinese aliens have come and said they didn't have any children, they weren't even married, and they've asked for asylum based on a future fear that they would have children and then they would be persecuted as a result. And courts have rejected that saying.
Right, and that's one scenario. But she's had the one child. She's had one. And
they then spent several years without attempting to have another child.
Right, and so maybe they were acquiescing to the government policy during that period of time. But suppose they decide they want a second or even a third child. Is it your view that if the government responded to the birth of a second child with forced sterilization, there's no problem?
If he had shown that...
Well, hasn't he shown that that's the policy in Fujian province?
No. I mean, the policy in Fujian province, which, like I said, it's described, I mean, it's forceful sterilization is not allowed. They fine people if they do anything.
Yes, but we've discussed this in previous cases. The fines are extraordinarily heavy. They're your annual income multiplied by the number of children over one child.
Your
disposable
income.
And if you can't pay it, what happens?
It's disposable income. It's not their total income. It's their disposable income, I believe.
What happens if you can't pay it?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think we can speculate as to what would have happened in this case because they never actually tried.
Well, that's ridiculous. You mean they have to go back, have the second child, and then if they're forcibly sterilized, then what? They come back to the United States or something?
Well, I think the evidence in this case shows that if they would do anything, the record doesn't show that they tried in any sense
to do what?
To resist this policy.
What? Now, wait, I don't understand the resistance talk. I don't understand that. When the statute talks about resisting the one-child policy, it doesn't mean you have to fight with the authorities, as the immigration judge put it in his opinion. It just means you want to have more than one child. You don't want to obey their policy. That's what resistance is. It's not violent resistance.
Well, the reason I'm bringing that up is because the court seems to be assuming that there would be this forced sterilization if they returned and tried to have another child. And I don't think that's supported by the record because they never actually tried. So we don't know exactly what the government would have done.
I know, but look what you're saying, that the only way in which they can get asylum is it goes back to China. And then if he's sterilized, then it shows, well, he should have been given asylum. But, of course, it's too late. So I don't know what you're...
Well, the burden is on him. I feel like I'm trying to... You're asking me to prove a negative here.
You're arguing that nobody can get asylum from China on the basis of a well-founded fear of future persecution, that you have to go back to China and actually see what happens to you?
No. Obviously, you can prove a well-founded fear. I'm not saying that's prohibited in every sense, but there has to be something more than these profile reports, which is really all...
What if you believe all his testimony?
Well, his testimony is that his wife was aborted. It's kind of conflicting whether that was forced or not. And the evidence...
He said it was forced, though, so we're saying what if you believe him, so...
Well, she doesn't say that, and she was there. So he can say that. I don't think there's too much weight you can give to his statement.
Well, but the Board of Immigration Appeals didn't say that. It said even if we believe him.
It said even if we accept addressing his claim that his wife was... I don't think the board believed
about
him.
About his testimony being weak, even if believed.
The board...
Isn't the immigration judge under a serious misunderstanding? When he's talking about active resistance to family planning and fighting with the authorities, he seems to think that the only way you can show that that you want to have more than one child is to have some kind of public or resistance. What is he talking about, or what do you think? Is that necessary?
I think the problem with Mr. Chen's case is that the way the statute's written that defines a refugee, the family planning refugee, he doesn't really fit anywhere within any of those kind of six different clauses
Why not? Suppose he testifies, you know, Fujian province, they really take this seriously. They're watching his wife. They have these, you know, ridiculous required checkups all the time. If there's a slip and she gets pregnant, he and she are in very serious trouble. Isn't that, if you believe his testimony, isn't that the situation?
If you believe his testimony, I don't exactly remember how he testified, but if you look at the State Department reports, that doesn't support that conclusion. I mean, to say sterilization is forced is a very...
It's a strange kind of vacuum in which you discuss this case. We've had a lot of opinions dealing with the one-child policy. Well, I don't understand. Why don't you try to fit your arguments into our cases?
Well, there's been a lot of board cases that I believe have come out since your case. So I didn't find any cases in this circuit that I felt were really very close to on point. I just didn't think you addressed this set of facts in a published case. But if you look at JHS from the board, JWS, SYG from the board, JS now, all those cases talk about aliens from the Fujian province who have two children born here or two children born in China who say, if I go back to China, I will be persecuted. And you can see how the board looked at the evidence in those cases and came to the conclusion that that did not support a well-founded fear of persecution. So I would just refer the court to those cases for the general country conditions that you seem to be concerned about.
Well, we've reversed cases like that.
The Second Circuit upheld it en banc. All three of those.
We're in the Seventh Circuit.
I understand. I just, like I said, I didn't find any cases addressing these set of facts. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brinkman. Do you have anything further, Mr. Zhou?
Sure.
Your Honor, I just wish to point out that the applicant in matter of JS was remanded. He did not even offer to intervene when the cadres came over to take his wife for IUD insertion. And his wife did not even claim to have an abortion. And he requested three times to have IUD removed and was denied. Then he left China. That's what happened to that applicant. Still, Attorney General remanded the matter for reconsideration because that applicant was found credible. I think that's why the credibility issue is so important. In that case, IJ found that applicant credible, and Attorney General mentioned that particular point in the decision to remand. That's why I believe this case deserves the same treatment. Thank you.
Did I read that correctly, that your client paid $65,000 to leave China?
Your Honor, I believe so. He did.
Wait, how much?
$65,000.
I believe so. In order to get freedom, I think that's the price of it, if you have to pay for something.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. And court will be in recess.